To be a writer, to create art, is to create something that could one day bring comfort to a stranger. In dark times, we often turn inwards to protect ourselves, revert to things that bring us comfort, or discover something new and bury ourselves deep inside it. Often it's a film with the script memorized, a book with a cracked spine and crumpled pages, or perhaps a TV show on repeat. And sometimes it's a space horror, crash landed on Earth. Hi, I'm Jenny, and welcome to Writing Lessons From, where every week I break down a story I've consumed, usually a TV show or a film, because that's how I roll, and figure out what the writing lessons are that we can take from it to improve our own writing and storytelling craft. And this week, we're looking at Alien Earth, but more specifically, episode 6. AKA how to not be boring going into that third act. Hi, how are you? This is potentially going to be the longest episode of Writing Lessons From. I've tried to edit this down. And then I sat there just, I highlighted all the bits that could be taken out. And they're basically all the descriptions of what the story is. And I thought, can I take out what the story is? Can I say it in a more blunt way? And I thought, A, I don't want to say it in a blunt way, because that's not what storytelling is. And B, I think you need the context so that I can talk about what I want to talk about. Another reason that I don't want to cut it too much, and also to explain the intro to this podcast, is that life has been hard recently. It's been tough. And I don't just mean the world is burning, we're on the verge of World War III. All of that horrible stuff. I mean, also on a personal level, life is just really tough at the moment. And when the going gets tough, I tend to disappear off into other worlds, other things. I get a bit obsessive. And for the last, 8-9 weeks, that obsession, that world I've disappeared off into has been Alien Earth. And just losing myself in the world and the characters and the story, but also how it's all come together. Like, I've been listening to so many interviews with writer and creator Noah Hawley about how he's done this, how he's made this, where the stories come from, how they got to certain scenes and all of that. And I've been listening to interviews with the actors about different things about the characters and things that they brought to the characters and how all of that fits and works together. First of all, if you're going through a really, really tough time and you're really stressed out and you want to disappear off into another world, I do not recommend choosing quite a stressful world to disappear off into. I've been having really weird dreams. The other thing, the main thing that I wanted to share with you, which is why the intro of this blogcast was the way it was, is that your art matters. When you create something and whatever that is, whatever, however you create your stories, if just one person consumes it and takes comfort in some way from it, you don't know what's going to hit right with someone. But if one person uses the thing that you've created to bring comfort into their lives, to help them cope with something, isn't that part of what art is? Especially at the moment, especially when the world is like this. We need art and we need storytelling and we need beautiful things to latch onto and disappear off into as a coping mechanism, and also to make sense of things, to distract ourselves, all of that. If just one person consumes it and takes something positive from it, that's enough. What you're doing is enough, and what you're doing is wonderful. Please don't stop creating art. And on that note, let's get on with it. During the press tour for Alien Earth at a San Diego Comic-Con panel with the cast, which you can find on YouTube, Timothy Oliphant, who plays Kirsch, declared that the show was a character study. Yes, that's exactly what Alien Earth is. Do you want to know how to write interesting characters? How to write a cast of them that intertwine and carry a story? Go watch Alien Earth. I mean, there are lots of other stories that do that really well, but right now, right here, we're talking about Alien Earth. And that's exactly what it is. It's so good. I could write a whole thesis on the characters, on just the characters. I won't, but I could. And it took me a while to figure out what I've learned from Alien Earth that would fit into the Writing Lessons From format and word count. But, you know, we failed on that. And then I watched episode 6. It's the beginning of the third act. And I had a small epiphany. Cue the incredible slow shot of the alien Earth letters coming into focus, a throwback to the original film, with previously on shots and shots we can't understand yet, layered behind them with outlines of xenomorphs? Obviously, onwards, there are huge spoilers for Alien Earth, and I do mean huge. Like I said, I think probably a lot of what I could cut out is context of the story and me telling you basically what's going on. Huge spoilers. We're talking about episode 6. So episode 7 and 8, not so much spoilers, but go and watch it. Go watch it first. And if you want to watch it, Alien Earth is available on Disney Plus. In the not too distant future, considering, democracy has failed. Yeah. Less on that, the better. And the world is now divided and run by 5 corporations because capitalism. Yay! One of those corporations is Weyland-Yutani, the corporation that orchestrates everything in the Alien franchise. And another is Prodigy, led by the youngest ever trillionaire and once upon a time boy genius, still a genius, no longer a boy, CEO Boy Cavalier. Cavalier is busy fixing the pesky problem of death. A talented engineer, he's built synthetics, the robots we all know in the Alien franchise, and is now turning his attention to creating a hybrid, basically putting a human mind in the body of a synthetic. His team has tried it on adults. It didn't work. But it works on children. So Prodigy have collected a group of terminally ill children, as you do, had their parents sign over their lives with the promise that their children will be saved, obviously, and one by one, the children's minds are put into the bodies of adult synthetics. Why adult synthetics? Because synthetic bodies don't grow straight into adults. There's a huge Peter Pan theme running throughout the whole story. So these children become the Lost Boys, led by the first child to transition into a hybrid, and she names herself Wendy. Around this time, meanwhile, elsewhere, a deep space research ship carrying 5 different species of alien and lots of dead bodies crashes into a Prodigy city. A Prodigy search and rescue team is sent in, including Wendy's brother, Hermit, who is a medic and doesn't know his sister's mind still lives. It turns out Wendy has been tracking her brother. She convinces Cavalier to let her and the Lost Boys go in to help. And help they do, bringing Hermit and those 5 aliens back to Cavalier's private island, Neverland Island, which, as we all know, is a horrible decision and can only go wrong. I could talk so much about the characters, how they're portrayed, the relationships, the story arcs, oh, it's so good, but I won't. We're going to talk about the writing lessons that I took from episode 6. On to the writing lessons. As with most stories, Alien Earth has 3 acts. There are 8 episodes. So by episode 6, we're entering the 3rd act. By this point, the aliens are in the secured basement laboratories. Boy Cavalier is certainly very proud of himself, and no one has died yet, you know, apart from all the people on the ship and the building it crashed into in episode 1. It's time something big happened. But how? I couldn't quite wrap my brain as to how this was going to happen. Is the xenomorph they've purposefully grown just going to break free? Maybe the I-Midge, guys, oh, will figure out how to unlock the cages. It is very intelligent. Or maybe Kirsch is just going to turn on everyone. How good is Kirsch, by the way? Did Boy Cavalier program in his dry humour, or is that just Timothy Oliphant having fun? Who knows? To understand why I was impressed by what actually happened in episode 6, we have to understand the hierarchy at Neverland Island. At the top of the hierarchy, CEO is Boy Cavalier, but Kirsch is in charge of the lab. Cavalier cleverly put him in charge when he discovered the xenomorph's parasitical start in life. No organic people allowed in the lab. Between them is Atomines, played by Ade Edmondson, who is amazing in such a scary, serious role. Who knew? For people who don't know, for people who aren't British, Ade Edmondson is a comedy legend in the UK. And Atom is carrying out Cavalier's orders, acting as a sounding board and as like a bit of a heavy and... who knows what else? His right-hand man. 3 people in charge. Nothing can go wrong in the lab because Kirsch is there. Nothing can go wrong elsewhere because Atomines and Cavalier are watching. But we need something to go wrong. So the creator, Noah Hawley, simply removed the 3 people in charge. Sometimes the simplest ideas really are the best ones. Cavalier Kirsch and Ines travel to presumably North America to meet with Weyland-Yutani and discuss the ownership of the ship and the aliens on board. In doing so, they leave Neverland Island with no firm hand in control, just a bunch of super strong children, a handful of scientists, and some clueless army people. Oh, and those five species of alien. On paper, this should be the weakest episode. It's a way of just starting the action. And in other shows, this probably would be the weakest, probably the most boring episode of the series. But something clever happened instead. At the Weyland-Yutani and Prodigy meeting, we got to see another side of Cavalier. Gone is the joyful, charming CEO. Here we meet ruthless, clever Cavalier, the powerful CEO. He walks in with dirty feet. He is barefoot throughout the whole series. It's a thing. He walks in with dirty feet that he puts up in Yutani's face. He doesn't want to listen. He's impatient. He talks back. And just when you think she'll get the upper hand, being all clean and professional as she is, he throws the law back at her. Does the moderator want to know why she's so desperate to get her ship back? That'll be the predatory, invasive species she's brought here. Don't believe him? That's okay. Cavalier has pictures. And sure, she can have her aliens back, but there's a 6-week quarantine period, so he best keep them until then, you know, for the safety of the planet. Boy Cavalier knows the laws. He's planned this thoroughly. He plays Yutani and the moderator without missing a beat. Although why Morrow, the only survivor from the crashed ship, doesn't speak up and point out that Cavalier is the reason the ship crashed is anyone's guess. Why didn't he speak up? Especially as Cavalier suggests that Weyland-Yutani crashed the ship on purpose, leaving Yutani somewhat speechless, which also suggests that Morrow hasn't mentioned the sabotage to her either. That could be a plot hole, but I love this so much I'm going to ignore it. This is all part of Cavalier's story arc, and it is beautifully done. In episode 1, we met a charming boy Cavalier with good intentions, and while we could guess that he was a wrong'un just because, you know, he's a trillionaire, we didn't know for sure. And over the episodes, that charm has drifted away, replaced with stern power and arrogance, and we can see the true disruptor that he is. And if you watch it carefully, you can also see how he looks is changing. He's becoming a little bit more desperate. His eyes are a bit more red. He's like, he's not sleeping. And while Cavalier is throwing his weight around in another country, making what should have been a mind-numbing scene incredibly interesting, things are starting to fall apart at Neverland. Poor Nibs is having her memories erased in an attempt to control and calm her, something that will lead to her snapping once more. It'll also be the catalyst for Wendy turning on Cavalier as she begins to realise they aren't as free to live as they were told they would be. Hermit is making escape plans with the help of poor Arthur, which you know can't end well. So the biggest shift in this episode? Oh, sweetheart Isaac, who has named himself because he didn't like being called Toodles, the passionate scientist-to-be. He goes against Kirsch's orders and ventures into the lab alone to feed the alien creatures and prove himself, just like children do. I think we've all been there, haven't we, when we were kids? You're so eager to grow up, so eager to prove yourself, but you don't stop and think everything through. Isaac breaks the feeding hatch door to one species, forgetting his own strength, and instead of calling for backup or help, he simply unlocks the door and attempts to slide the trade of food in without causing a mishap. It comes as something of a shock that this species could kill a hybrid. Nothing can kill a hybrid. That's what we've been told throughout the whole season. These children are now essentially immortal. That's the point of the product, right? Immortality. The only clue we're given as to Isaac's fate is the food he puts on the tray for this particular species, the fifth species, the one we haven't met yet. A fly, ooh, that eats minerals, metals, hardware, motherboards. Oh, my heart broke for Isaac. The child that just wanted to prove himself, and the first of the hybrids to die. In fact, the first of our alien Earth cast to die. But it had to happen. Because at the beginning of the third act, something big needs to happen. The flies are released into the lab, meaning Kirsch can't step foot inside, even if he was there to help. Instead, it's Arthur, human Arthur, scientist Arthur, that rushes to Isaac's aid after finding Slightly hiding outside the lab. Do you understand why I have to tell you what's going on? Because there's so much happening. Slightly, of course, has other issues. He's being blackmailed to take a human and expose them to the overmorphs. Those are the alien eggs that the facehuggers come out of. And the egg will do the rest. Once Arthur has rushed in after Isaac, all Slightly has to do is open the cage to the eggs, and there you have it. One facehugger stuck on Arthur, hidden away by Slightly. One dead, one soon to be dead, and control is lost. Not for long, of course. Kirsch is watching all of this on his tablet on the flight back home to Neverland Island, and he doesn't seem to want to bother the happy boy Cavalier, even when Cavalier asks what's wrong. Order is restored, such as it is, by episode 7, when the adults have returned home, but the damage has been done. And actually, it's not the aliens they really have to worry about. Ah! Love it so much. I've cut so much out of this, of me just going on and on about how much I love this show. But we're here for a reason. What are the writing lessons? The main writing lesson I took from episode 6 was a structural one. I know, boring, but also really important. Whatever genre you're writing, something needs to be happening at the beginning of Act 3 to spark things off. And actually, it can, in theory, be boring stuff. On paper, the three most powerful people go to a meeting in another country. It's not that exciting. It doesn't fill you with wonder. It's not until you build in the character arcs and how those three characters are important to the running of everything that it starts to get exciting. With Kirsch gone, Isaac is an unsupervised child in a dangerous environment. With Cavalier and Ines gone, Arthur has the space to give escape information to Hermit. And because Cavalier is such a vibrant character, the meeting itself is also not a boring affair. It's part of his story arc, his changing demeanour. On a lesser note, so is Kirsch secretly watching the lab cameras and having a quiet conversation with Morrow in the lift. Why was Kirsch in that lift? Did he have to pop to the toilet before they set off home? Synthetics don't need to go to the toilet, do they? What was that about? So yes, the writing lessons here are structural, but more excitingly, episode 6 is a reminder that every scene, every writing decision is an opportunity for character growth, to further your character's arcs, to add something else interesting, even if what they're doing in theory is bureaucracyville. It's also not what I was expecting. I was expecting something explosive, an alien escaping, the xenomorph escaping, much death, shattered glass. I was not expecting a board meeting and the illusion of control continuing somewhat. And that's what the Alien story franchise is all about, control. This is why it's so hard to break down stories that are good. There's just too much going on. Yes, the writing lessons here are about structure, but using scenes to further develop characters, about not wasting opportunities. But also, here comes the concept of themes again, of bigger messages, of one action having consequences elsewhere, like ripples. Like I said, I could write a thesis. How on alien Earth do you begin to create something so complex? It's methodical. Boring, I know, but that's the craft and that's the hard work. The excitement doesn't come from the building necessarily. The excitement, at least for me, definitely for me, comes from the characters and the potential of what they can be and what they become. That excitement, the characters, can make the most boring scene fascinating and turn what could be boring into something magic. I have just checked the time. This is such a long episode. Are longer episodes like this good? It's really hard to talk about something so complex when you're trying to break it down and there are so many different layers and so many different things, and then trying to put all of that into 1,000 words it's really hard. It's really hard. So let's look at this as an experiment. Not in a lab, without any vivisection. How horrible was that? And does this work? Can I do this? Can I every now and then do a longer episode? Does this work? We'll find out. We'll find out. I hope you're well. I hope this has inspired you in some way to go and look at the opportunities you're giving your characters and your character arcs and how to make things more interesting. Have a lovely week telling stories and writing amazing, interesting characters. Bye.